So, John, very warm welcome to this Golimbri collective conversation. We can talk about lots and lots of things to do with relational being and our work and mutual interest. But before we do that, do you want to say some words about you, who you are, what you do, what you love?
Of course, thank you. And thank you for the invitation to be here. And so my background is all sorts of things mixed together, which I like. I'm a generalist in what I think of as an age of specialists. But I spent several decades in corporate life, focused on IT and then on the kind of people side of project management. And in the background, I'd been doing a lot of work in self-development, and that took me towards something called spiral dynamics, which may or may not come up in the conversation, but which is quite sort of central to my work and to the genesis of relational being.
Lovely. Thank you, John. And I'm really comfortable with us just exploring where we go with this rich conversation. And what I wanted to do, I was thinking about it last night, is I was thinking about our work, and I've read your book, The Science of Possibilities, and thinking about this conversation, I called to mind and asked for one of the beings from our Curiously Connected Cards set to come and in some way create an energetic bridge for us. So who came was the animal cicada, and I just want to read the statement that comes with that animal as a sort of scene setting. I communicate the great alleluia of the present moment. My pulsating chorus is a reminder to trust in the rhythms of life and its mysterious timing. Patience, rather than forcing things to happen, allows the process of change, rebirth, and life's unfolding to manifest with greater ease. I'll just pop the paper back. Where does that land with you, John, and relational being?
It's a lovely place to start. It has such a sense of finding our place in flow and the trust in stepping out of our kind of history, believing that we needed to and should and can control life, stepping away from that and into a place where we actually engage with our relationship with life. I mean, that's part of the theme of relational being, is the sense of standing in between rather than operating from a place of, oh, this is who I am and this is my personal identity, that we reframe our identity and our sense of being as existing in that context of flow and relationship with all things and everything that we choose.
That's really nice, and it I think it reminds me of something that I had read many years ago, a quote from Chief Oren Lyons, where he said, "We are, after all, a mere part of creation, and we stand somewhere between the mountain and the ant as part and parcel of that creation." And I think that's what you're speaking about.
Very much so. And that I assume that he was speaking, and certainly we are having this conversation in the context of a history of the kind of enormous and wonderful growth of technology and what that's brought to us, but our awareness now of the downside of that, that it had unforeseen consequences, and that we kind of overstep the mark in what we think we can do in relation to nature, to each other, and that we're trying to find a way to step back from that and find a different relationship with all of creation and with ourselves in that.
And can you say, I really like that, John, and I, somewhere between the mountain and the ant, as Chief Oren Lyons, I think, was pointing towards, what for you, could you just begin to unfold some story about what, where do you go with relational being when you start thinking about a different place, not a sort of superiority or a hierarchy, but a different place of relating from?
Well, where I go, where this started, and you'll know this from my book, was the recognition that what we have been taught about how the world actually functions is simply inaccurate, and that for all the benefits of technological progress, what it's taken us into is into a perspective where we see the material universe as being where everything happens. And the more that we come to understand what's really going on, the more that we'll recognize and engage with the fact that what happens in the material world has something taking place underneath it, which is in the field of consciousness, in the field of information that actually drives what are the shapes that matter takes when it comes out of energy. And so much that people have been kind of playing with, and I imagine that, you know, a lot of those listening to this will have a sense of, where we talk about, well, sometimes it comes up as everything is energy, or it comes up as the quantum field, without anybody really quite knowing what that is. And that, well, one form of that is that there's a particular aspect of how people talk about quantum, which is around uncertainty. And what I like to see in the quantum field is that in that uncertainty is possibility. And so when the field of information around what is possible is changed, when we choose to change that, or when other beings choose to change that, or whether the flow of the universe itself is changing what's in that field, then something new becomes possible, something creative can happen. And that, recognizing that that is driven, propelled from the information field rather than from the actions of matter and us as material beings, that really reshapes what's possible for us.
And I can imagine that if people are listening, they may be curious, what do you understand by this term, the information field? Can you say some more about it? How can we begin to understand what is this thing?
Great question, and yes, I can say, and I need to say more about that. So we have been encouraged by science to perceive what happened in the universe from the Big Bang onwards as being kind of random. And to some extent it is, but there's an order to that randomness, that what persists are the forms of energy which are capable of sustaining. So the nature of a quark or an electron or kind of larger structures in molecules and so on, what's sustainable is something which you can think of as having a place in cosmic memory. So it's recorded, and what we live among is the development of that field of what the universe knows and remembers about itself. And so what to a degree is kind of fixed, it's the laws of nature, right, and it's how nature works. But at the edges of that, in living systems, that's something where the field of information is continually evolving, because what happens between a tree and the soil, or between the tree and the animals in the forest, that is a continuously developing relationship. And what happens with us in our relationship to the universe is equally something which continually develops, and where we actively contribute to that with our consciousness and our choice.
Wow, I'm so much is going on for me as you're speaking, John. Can I try and just anchor some bits a little bit like tent pegs flapping around in the wind? What I think I hear you say is that the information field holds memory of what is sustainable, holds the possibility. So it holds, I'm guessing, the possibility of how a dandelion looks and grows from its seed to its plant to its flower. So there's some structures, I can't think of a better word, some formats of energy that hold a dandelion together. And then the information field, I think you're also saying, contains the possibility of interaction between that dandelion and many other species and beings.
Absolutely. And of course, some of what the information field holds has become embedded in physical structures. So, you know, it's not that DNA doesn't still have a place. What was built, what the information field has kind of grown and developed, included the structure of amino acids and of DNA and so on. And so there's a place where we now exist in the balance between what's got that sense of being fixed to some extent. And of course, we know that DNA also can change, and that, you know, anyone who has come across Bruce Lipton and epigenetics knows that that can change more than 20 years ago it was believed it could change, because the environment influences the unfolding of our genes, and the genes in all living creatures. And so there's this kind of ongoing dance of the relationship between what has form and what is flexible. And the field also, it doesn't just include the memory of the physical structures, it also includes the memory of what's happened. So what flows through our history, through our families, through what's kind of in the field of our collectives, our local collective consciousnesses, our wider collective consciousnesses, all of that, they're different layers of or scales of activity within that field of information. And when we do work that is intuitive, you know, if you look at what at a shamanistic connection with the natural world, or with what you're actually doing now in a kind of modern shamanism with Kalimbri, it's the relationship with the field of information, that what you can pick up about Cicada, or about what, you know, we can pick up about each other, or about any other living creature, any other part of the living system, that's all part of the richness of what's available to us, and which we have only got like a millimeter out of a kilometer of. This is what we could do with that. This is what we could become aware of. This is what where we can develop in our understanding of how we relate to the field of information and what that can give to us.
And I am aware of feeling very excited about, I guess, a question which was about why you chose the title of your book, The Science of Possibilities. I had always felt that there's something at the edge of what happens when I'm in relationship with all these possibilities, and you talk about choice and choicefulness. Can you say some more about that?
Certainly. So recognizing that there is this living system that's unfolding, and I have my place in that living system, whether it's, you know, in my family or in relationship to the place that I live or to all that I do. Because we are in the flow of that relationship, our choice has a potential to shift what happens in and around us. And there's an interesting edge with that, because, you know, people have been talking for many years about law of attraction and about kind of resonance and how we sit within that. And there has been a tendency to do that in a way which is quite centered on us and our choices.
Right.
And that doesn't entirely work, because if you're not doing that in a relationship with awareness of what the flow is, then it's a bit like trying to swim upstream in a river.
Mm.
You know, you're just not going to get where you want to go, because you're not in the flow.
Mm.
And so this is where intuition is really important, or where our sensing and our awareness, not just of what we see and feel with our five senses, but what's going on and what we can detect with our other forms of sensing.
Mm.
The more that we're able to engage with those other forms of sensing, the better informed, the better we're able to be in flow, and the more able we are to step out of that place of thinking that we need to control things in order to be safe or successful, that actually we find out how to be successful and safe through being in harmony with the world around us, with nature, with that, you know, that's how we step out of the history of ecological damage and climate catastrophe and all that we know about that.
Yes. And can I pick up, because I what you brought to mind, John, was a Hopi elder, a Hopi Indian elder prophecy, maybe made 20 years ago, perhaps more, where the elder said something about it's time to let go of clinging onto the riverbank, because the river is moving too fast now. And what I remember he said was, and in that letting go, try and trust in the flow of the river and look at who is swimming around with you.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, that's spot on from my point of view. And I think, you know, part of our training, our education, our view of science has been that we analyze stuff and then we make decisions. And, you know, one of the maybe slightly similar images that I use is, well, you can't actually surf by sitting on the beach. And when you're on the board, you can't analyze the wave.
No.
You have to feel the wave, you feel the movement of the board, you feel the wind around you, whatever it is, your sense of balance. It's an instant by instant process.
Yes.
And that is what we need if we're going to live sustainably, is that relationship with the flow of the wave.
Mm. It's really beautiful, that analogy of the surfing the wave, and that we can't think now, we can't think our way through it. And it led, I guess it, what I'm wondering is if people are listening to this and they're thinking, okay, so I kind of get the principle of being in the flow, and sometimes it's called kind of a being in the zone somehow, where our senses are open. But can I learn, is it possible to learn that way of being, or to cultivate it, or to grow it, to strengthen it?
I'm quite convinced that it's possible to grow and strengthen that. And to some extent, that implies that there's something to do. And well,
yes, it does.
Yeah, yes, you know, you can go and do training for your intuition or mindfulness or whatever it is. But that implication, I think, takes us away from one of the core things, which is it's the letting go of what we think we know. There's a quote from Mark Twain about it's not what you don't know that gets you into trouble, it's what you know for sure that just ain't so. And so there's a lot of just ain't so's in the world. I mean, you know, most of us go through an educational process to fill us up with a lot of just ain't so's.
Yes.
And so it's kind of moving into that place where we go into curiosity, we go into questioning, and we maybe explore some of the things that are being said, and not just by people like me or Hopi elders, that there's a lot of people who are saying things which conventional thinking will challenge, or you'll get this horrible phrase woo-woo. Actually, the world is so much more wonderfully woo than you can possibly imagine. And that's when it really gets exciting, is when you start engaging with, oh, that's what happens. That's how it works.
Mm.
And, you know, you asked, and I didn't quite answer why I called it the science of possibility, was, well, this is what science truly is, as distinct from what science has become.
Can you say a little bit more about that, John? What, when you say, because maybe a lot of people, myself included, probably until I'd read your book, was that I don't know, science is a sedimentary layers of learning, one on top of the other, and it sort of moves, and sometimes it makes huge leaps. And I don't quite get the feeling of the, when you talk, even the word science, it's funny, I don't get the feeling of surfing with science.
Well, no, and that's part of what it's become. I mean, I suspect if you were to go back and have conversations with, I don't know, Plato or Aristotle or Archimedes, they would have had much more of a sense of the surfing, because they were doing a lot of observation.
Right.
And of course, I mean, more recently, if you were to look at what the anthroposophists did, taking from Goethe and Goethean science, that was also a lot based around observing what's really happening.
Yes.
Rather than what somebody says is happening. And the trouble is, you know, science, of course, science is brilliant because of what it has done for us, but it has its tunnel vision.
Right.
And what we've hit are the real problems of that tunnel, that when you only see the material world, you have no possibility to engage with the information field or the consciousness that is shaping reality, because the material methodology and the materialistic paradigm has excluded that.
Right.
From what we can even look at. I mean, you cannot, you know, you certainly could not get a research grant to go and do that. And it's been put outside the paradigm of, well, this is what reality is.
Mm.
So that's why it can be quite difficult, you know, in the way that you said when you were bringing up your question of, well, what science is, because yes, there are all these layers of things that we have learned, and it's not that Newton was wrong, or it's not that, you know, that Einstein's theory of relativity doesn't apply. It's what happens around the margins and the edges of that, and the questions that aren't allowed to be asked. So that's built a whole and a whole area of kind of, well, you can either live in a spiritual world or you can live in a material world.
Yeah.
And that, you know, it's like, well, that's not who we are. That's not who humans have been. We have both of those aspects to our being.
Yes.
And we have, you know, millions of people have had experiences of something happening that was unexplainable by science. You know, they've had the sense of a presence, the presence of a person in their family who was dying, showing up with them. I was talking to somebody yesterday and she was describing how when she was a teenager, she had the experience, she would put her hand on an object and she would pick up all sorts of information about what was going to happen to and around that object.
Wow.
And it's like people do that.
Yes.
And particularly we, you know, that's part of what children may do and what gets suppressed in children because we think they're making stuff up.
Yes.
When actually their sense that there is some dead person coming out of the wall, that is an energy of somebody who used to sleep in that bedroom and who still has some kind of presence there, because these are memories held in the field. And if you're sensitive, you may pick up on different aspects of what is remembered in the field.
Yes.
And you know from, because you do constellations work,
yeah,
that is, you know, that is deeply embedded in what people do in, you know, in family constellations, in systemic constellations, that all sorts of aspects of the past will flow through into the present. So we know this from so many different aspects of our experience,
yeah,
from how people feel about their pets. You know, I mean, you can list thousands of these kinds of things which science has said, no, that's all imaginary, or it's just a kind of an artifact of a consciousness, of a brain process which doesn't quite work as it's supposed to, and where we don't know where the boundaries are. I mean, it's just complete crap, you know. But we live with it, and we're educated with it. And
yeah,
I come back to that question of, well, you know, be curious, be willing to accept that maybe it's not what you've been told it is.
And I love what you're saying, and this word possibility comes up, and I guess part of me would want to, for people who are listening to this and who might want to inquire more around this subject of the information field, and what does relational being mean, what is accessible to me, like, in a really, could you give some sense, John, maybe this is an impossible question, like, at a practical, daily, moment-by-moment way of living, what difference might it begin to make if we can access more of these dimensions?
We won't do so many things that are stupid. Is my first response. You know, we will just have much more of a sense of the consequences of our actions and our choices. We will have much more of a sense of, well, where's the river flowing and
right,
how do I deal with that? We will find it so much easier to let go of the belief that we have to control life and that is the way that we find safety and security, because we will have much more of a sense of, oh, this is my security is in the engagement with the flow, and it's in my vulnerability to step into that place of trust.
Mm.
So, you know, what can people do? Well, you know, follow your nose is kind of, it's not the same for any of us. There's no, there's no sense that I would want to bring of, well, there's this practice and you must do this practice. And no, that's not how it works. We each have our own journey. We each have our own relationship. We each have our own unfolding of, well, where does this sit in my life and what particular aspect of it is most appropriate for me to explore right now as my first step, and to absolutely hold the sense that each of those things is a step. So I'm not looking for an answer.
No.
I'm looking to explore more and more of my being and our being and the universe's being. And, you know, each one of us is only ever going to kind of touch the tiniest proportion of all that is there. I was thinking this morning, I think some bizarre thoughts sometimes. I was thinking about how difficult it is, certainly for me, and I think for most of us, to grasp the fact that we're each made up of 40 trillion cells. Like, can you get your head around those numbers? Or when we look at the scale of the cosmos and how many billions of galaxies, each with a billion stars. I mean, it's like, it's all incomprehensible. So we can't touch very much of that. Oh, and the other part of the bizarre thought was that the amount of actual kind of cash or money in bank accounts in dollars equates to $1 per cell of those 40 trillion cells. And that was just a numerical coincidence. I mean, like, wow. I said, I think some daft thoughts sometimes, but there's also a sense in that of the scale,
yes,
and of where we sit in that.
Yes.
And, you know, our willingness to engage with the life of each cell in the body, and the fact that while we've been talking, you know, there's probably several million of your skin cells and several million of my skin cells which have been replaced while we sit here without us having to do anything about it, to find our place in, well, actually life is pretty magical.
Mm-hmm.
It's already part of the reason we label some things as miracles is because there are some things that are miracles that we just don't even recognize.
Yeah.
So it's that engagement with our curiosity and with our willingness to explore and find out, well, you know, what's real for me? How do I connect with the field? Because each of us, as far as I can see, does that in a different way. You know, some people are like the woman I described who touched an object.
Yes. You
know, that's a particular, very specific way of picking up information. I don't do that. You know, what I learned about intuition has a particular quality to it. And then I see other people who, when they engage with intuition, the information flows in a completely different way.
Yes.
And yours, your way of being with that is quite different than mine. So there's no prescription for this. You know, go out and explore, find out what it is for you.
I really, really like that, John. It feels like, in a way, that draws us to some sense of invitation, which is, I love the follow your nose, and I love the fact that, in a sense, there isn't prescription, but there is curiosity. And something you said, I just wanted to, not to end on, but ask you to end on, which is the difference between, and maybe this opens a whole other debate, but you talked in relational being about I am compared to I be, and perhaps you could just say some final words about that.
I'd be very happy to, because the language that we use to some extent has embedded that materialist perception.
Mm-hmm.
So when you think of yourself as a thing, it's quite difficult to be in flow. When you think of yourself as being, then there's more potential to engage with the flow and to be as an ongoing kind of process, as a living existence. And one of the things that you know that I've said is you are the experience and the experiencer. Yeah. And to be both, because you could spend a lot of time reading philosophy and find that people have had a real difficulty with finding what our existence, I mean, you go back to, Descartes, I doubt, therefore I think, therefore I am. And then you're kind of stuck with that, because if you start from a position of doubt, then where are you going to go? And, philosophers, I mean, I spent two terms when I was at university trying to study philosophy before I decided that, no, this was actually not, this was a lot of people asking silly questions and coming up with differences of silly answers. And that was when I stepped out into studying some stuff that was much more like what we're talking about here, which was about the relationship between humanity and creation and what life is about. So that sense of engagement with that being is something that that's what life is. Life is being, and it's not I am a thing, it's I am a part of the flow, I am part of the experience, I am a person with a particular perspective on the experience,
yeah,
that is uniquely mine. And you're having, even though we're sitting here together, your experience is actually quite different. And that's how it should be. And in that space, it also knocks out a lot of what we get stuck with around what's right and what's wrong.
Yes. John, I think that's probably as good a place as any. This is an endless flow of conversation and possibility. And thank you so, so much for being here and with me and sharing. And I guess what I would like to do is to offer to those that are listening that if this has sparked some curiosity in you, then please look out for details, because we are going to be putting on a joint venture between John and Colibri, and we'd love you to join us. So again, John, thank you.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.